guys. I'm fantasy author J.H. Fleming.
And I'm science fiction and fantasy author Philip Dreyer Duncan. And we have a super great guest tonight who is a poet, an author, a spooky storyteller person, and a tarot reader. But she goes by many names, so I'll let her introduce herself by all of her names.
Hi, I am Rebecca Harris. You will find me mostly online under Becca Harris. That's the name my friends call me. That is the name that I use for my spooky podcast. You'll also find me in future under RJ Harris. That'll be for all of my sci-fi and fantasy related stuff. But that's me. Hey, guys.
And despite all the many names, they're all very similar. So that makes it easy. Hello, how are you?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Good.
Doing well.
So I am highly professional and just realized that I don't have my show notes pulled up. So I'm going to stall for time by talking like this. Show notes. All right, let's talk about spooky stuff. Tell us about the spooky stuff. Everybody wants to know.
Spooky stuff. Okay. So my spooky podcast, I actually collect real people's spooky stories. So what I like to do is sit down and chat with people and kind of interview them and get their story from them in their own words. I record this, then I take that and I transcribe it. And I turn that transcription into a story, but I fictionalize everything, kind of change some details to protect the privacy of the storyteller. So most of the people who have a spooky story do not want to be known for having a spooky story, but they're willing to share if it's kind of anonymous. So I'll collect the stories and kind of put them out there. But it all started because I really like spooky things. I enjoy a good ghost story, and I've had some experiences that made me wonder about how real all of these things really are. Because I used to be a skeptic, but now I am much more of a believer.
What do you think was like the catalyst moment that made you go, all right, maybe I do buy into some of this?
I had a haunted apartment.
Okay.
Actually, the first episode of my podcast, if you would like to go and listen to the whole entire story, it's all on there if you want to hear about it. The only thing that's not real on there are the roommates' names. So I changed those for their privacy. But I had a haunted apartment and we thought it was a little girl. And then it started moving furniture around and blocking things off, like the hallway, and flipping chairs over and tearing the door off of my bathroom vanity and putting it in my bed. That was a fun day.
And what is your podcast called?
Beyond the Veil, Paranormal Tales.
Very cool. Now, are you still actively adding to that, or did you pause it?
So I did a first season, 17 episodes long, and I have paused it. It was eating up way too much of my time. I loved it. It was great. Had a great time doing it. But each episode, the way that I did it, just to help with the fictionalization, it took me at least a week or 2 weeks to get one episode out. And it was just too much time. So while I loved it, it was time to set it aside. But I am still collecting stories to eventually, when I have time and I'm not doing my fiction stuff, get another season out. But I think I'll do this one a little bit differently, where I give myself more time, maybe prep in advance a little bit better than I did the last time around.
And you, for your writing, you do both adult and YA?
Yes, I do a little bit of both.
Now, are both of those in the science fiction fantasy realm, or are they completely different? Or
I write all over the place. So my little short story is kind of a paranormal tale. That doesn't really, it's hard to explain it without having actually read the whole thing, but it's kind of paranormal at the end. You don't realize until the end that that's what's going on the whole time. So it's just sort of a story of these girls in high school going through some stuff, and it's, you know, a little bit of drama, a little bit of spooky things, but with a little bit of a twist at the end there. That would be Nothing Lasts Forever, a little short story.
That's fun.
By Rebecca Harris. Yeah.
Nice.
But often do sci-fi. I like the sci-fi. I also like fantasy. I write kind of wherever the story wants to go, I'll dive right in.
How did you know at the time that the podcast, I mean, other than the fact that it ate up so much time, how do you decide like what project to put aside?
So as far as that goes, I mean, with the podcast, it was mostly the time factor. I really wanted to get some other things done, and I kept trying to fit it in, and there just wasn't space for it. I had too much else going on. Got the kids, you know, running around. They were much younger at the time. My children are older now. My youngest is 19. My oldest is 21, which I don't feel old enough to have children those ages, but here we are.
Old enough to hit.
But yeah. Old enough to move out, man. If only they could afford it. My goodness. But yeah, I mean, trying to find what's sparking joy at the moment. So if something isn't working for me, or if I get stuck somewhere and it's just I'm banging my head against a wall for too long, I'll set it aside. So a lot of my books, I'll write one all the way through on a first draft and then switch to something else and write that all the way through on a first draft and then go back to the first one, kind of work on the editing a little bit and see all the problems with it. Sometimes those problems make me get stuck and I need to shelve it and think about where I'm going with it for a while. So the current work in progress that I'm doing that's sci-fi was that way. I hit a wall and really needed to think out the problems, and I finally figured out what I'm trying to do with it and have come back to that one. But that one sat on a shelf for a couple of years.
Oh, interesting. I think I've done that a few times, usually because something sparks my interest and I get excited elsewhere and I don't mean to let it sit for as long as I do, but sometimes that does happen, as the Blade Mage fans can attest.
It happens. I mean, we got to do what we love. And if you're not enjoying something at the moment, move on to something else and come back to it. Or maybe move on from it and you don't go back to it. But there's no wrong way to proceed.
Is that your puppy clickety-clacking in the background?
Yes. I've got a puppy in a crate. Because if she's out of the crate, she's going to be gnawing on some bones. We don't need that.
I was like, I hear noises. That's got to be a puppy.
Yeah, she's judging me for having her locked up while I'm in the same room.
So what was it like? Because neither JH or I have any experience with this, nor will we. What was it like trying to pursue your creative endeavors when you were working full time and trying to raise them children's?
Oh my goodness, there is so little time for the writing. And my policy was always kind of kids first. They're only young once. So that my writing actually got shelved for a few years when I didn't have the time or energy to focus on it because there was too much energy being put into the children. But the older they got, the better it was. I started finding ways of getting them to be busy and quiet so that I could focus and work while they were awake. I tried to utilize nap times when they were young. I would work after they went to bed. So there's a lot of different ways to try to fit it in. I also tend to work a lot when I'm at work. I'll take my computer with me and work on my breaks. Mm-hmm. Or I'll go to a coffee shop for an hour after work and just work there for a minute. Try to fit the time in wherever I can and make the most of it.
Fair enough. We had a brief conversation about, I always ask for an advice thing, but maybe this would be yours anyways. And it was about, maybe you had an opportunity arise because of how you interacted and behaved at a convention.
Yes. So hanging out with, people and just, being nice. It doesn't take much, just being nice and being a good person and listening to other people and, being open to criticism as well, letting people know, hey, I'm working on this thing, but it's not ready yet. I was able to kind of get a little bit of an in with a writing group. There was a couple of people I was hanging out with. We just, gone to a bar that was interesting and fun and gone and we're sitting and chatting, just, hanging out. And I mentioned something, I think I said something in passing about how I've got these beta readers and they read my stuff and they're like, oh, this is really good. And it's like, that's great. I'm glad that you like it, but that doesn't help me. That does not help me improve it. That does not help me make it better. And the two of them just kind of looked at each other and then looked back at me and then looked at each other and they were like, maybe. So they had to go and like run this idea by the rest of the group. Cause you know, it's not just a one man show or anything. You gotta make sure everybody's cool with including new people. And it's one of those things when you're asking somebody else to read your work, that's not always an easy thing to allow new people in. So they all kind of chatted about it and decided that, yeah, they would let me and my friend who I was there with join their little writing group and kind of see how that went. And it seems to be going pretty well. They have been very helpful with my stuff. I've been, you know, trying to be helpful back with all of their things that they're putting out. So I've seen a lot of works in progress that, you know, some need more work than others, but that's how it always is. And so I'm sure mine is in the needs more work than others category as well. But yeah, we all just kind of help each other out and try to help each other improve our own work and do better. But other than that, I mean, the other things that have come up from hanging out at the writing conventions and meeting new people and just being nice and there was a very lovely person that I met both years, actually. I met this person two separate times, two separate interactions, both very different from one another. But I have the opportunity to pitch to somebody when my book is ready to go, just from our little chats that we had, and they've given me some good advice about, you know, the length of the project and what I should be aiming for as, you know, a breakout author trying to find my way into the world. But yeah, so had I not been open and, you know, available to chat and responded nicely to things that were said, I don't think that I would be sitting here with this opportunity waiting for me when I'm ready to move things forward. So once again, just be nice.
I wish you would have been nice to us when we met you. Then we would have invited you onto our podcast.
Gosh, I know. I'm such a jerk. You guys are just the worst, I tell you.
We didn't hang out with you pretty much the whole convention.
Yes, yes, with all of the Canadians that adopted us all. To be fair, you got to be a nice person if you're going to get adopted by all of the Canadians.
Yeah, you
right?
have to like, be. Right? Well, maybe Gerald's an exception.
Yeah.
Perhaps. No, they're all fun.
So the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, so how did you get into tarot reading?
Gosh. So the friend that was supposed to go with me to the last World Fantasy, she'll be at Superstars.
Oh, yeah?
She is the one that got me into it. Yeah, she went with me to World Fantasy the first year that I went and was planning on going the second year, but stuff came up. She's got other obligations and a younger kid, and she had to drop what she was doing to be home for the child for various reasons, but hopefully she'll be able to make it to Superstars and you guys get to meet her. But that's my friend Beth. And she started by reading me and handed me her cards and said, give this a try. Like, I don't know about this. This is interesting and different. But yeah. It's one of those fun things. Once you dive into that world, you don't really dive back out unless it's just not for you. So I started down a little trail. We found a nice little place in Denver that has a whole bunch of different cards. My goodness, do they have a lot of cards, like bookshelves full of different cards. I had no idea there were so many to choose from. But this little shop in Denver, Herbs and Arts, I'd have to look up their address, but Herbs and Arts in Denver, you can actually take one of their decks and sit at a table and do a reading with it to see if it's the right kind of a deck for you or not. Which most places won't do. You can't even open them up and look at the cards. But this place is like, it's fine.
That's cool.
People that take these things home cleanse the cards in whatever way they see fit. So they're like, if you don't know how to do that, maybe this isn't for you. So they have a different philosophy there, I guess. But I have, oh my gosh, so many different decks now.
You know, I was just thinking, I have to tell this real quick because we were talking about the children, having children or whatever. I went and got my hair cut today, and the lady who was cutting my hair, she was like, do you have any kids? And I was like, no, don't want any, you know? So we got into that whole conversation. She's like, what about pets? And I'm like, yeah, we had a dog for a long time or whatever. And she goes, here's the thing. I got to like say this because I'm going to be a little bit of a jerk. I don't like it when they talk to me while I'm getting my hair cut because it's very relaxing and I just kind of want to doze off, right? So I don't really want to have like the conversation with the stranger. It's like the one time I don't want to talk to a stranger. Anyway, so she's like, she asked about the dog or whatever, and I was like, yeah. And she's like, well, that's basically like having kids. And I just go, yeah, except you can't just throw a kid outside. And then she stopped talking to me for like 5 minutes.
They did that in the 80s. I got thrown outside an awful lot. My goodness.
I did as well come to think of it, but. Yeah. All right.
That's not the way now.
What would be your, if that wasn't it, and I'm going to put you on the spot so you have to come up with another one, what would be your one piece of advice for the budding author?
I mean, other than just sitting down and actually getting the words out, don't judge yourself too much. Don't let your inner editor get in the way when you're writing your first draft, especially. Just write the words. My best piece of advice that I think anybody ever said to me was just tell yourself the story. That's draft one. Tell yourself the story and then you go back and you fix it. You cannot fix a blank page. You cannot edit a blank page.
True story. All right. I like it. All right. Let's do the news.
Sif was stuff pulled up, jerk.
We're recording and that's staying in the episode.
Good.
You guys can see how she treats me. Earlier, she squirted taco sauce on me. I did not.
You did that to yourself.
I did it because you were punching me.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Which means you did it. Nobody wants to hear about our domestics, do you?
Why are you bringing it up then?
You gonna fire off the news or what?
I'm trying, but someone won't quit talking. All right, first bit of news. SIFWA has announced the dates for the Nebulas. So this year they will be June 6th through 9th in Pasadena, California.
Woo, woo. Are we going to go? Yeah. We should talk about going. We'll talk about that.
We could talk about it.
We'll talk about that not on the podcast.
Yeah. So they actually sent me an email about it today, and they do have like the links where you can volunteer to be speakers or suggest panel topics and whatnot. So that could be a thing.
Yeah. All right. So guess what? Holiday book sales were really good. According to this article from Good E-Reader, this past Christmas week sales were the best for print books in like 5 years.
Nice.
That makes really us good. Happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was, you know what it was? It was that episode. Did we do an episode where we talked about YOLO Boca Flowed?
Yeah, we talked about it. YOLO Boca Flowed.
Yeah, then it was us. We're the reason for that. Let's see strength of our following. It's all those Christmas Eve books. That might not be true.
Yeah, probably not. All right, the next one, I actually just saw this a little bit before we started. So the Los Angeles Public Library, I guess, is going to now be publishing books. And I only kind of skimmed the article and was talking about some bookstores have also been doing this, but I guess it's kind of new for a library to dive into that realm, which is kind of interesting.
I read the whole thing, and actually what happened is there is a publisher in Los Angeles called Angel City Press. And mm-hmm. they are totally focused on publishing stuff that centers around Los Angeles's like cultural history. And so they were looking to retire. And so some donors stepped in and were like, well, could we get this into the hands of the Los Angeles Public Library? So it all worked out and they ended up picking up the press, and that's sort of how it happened. So it's kind of neat. It's weird, but it's neat.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it doesn't seem like the kind of thing that a library would typically do. So that's very interesting.
Right. I was curious, apart from printing the books, how much of a publisher's kind of job would they be doing? Like, are they going to do any sort of distribution, or would it be in bookstores, that sort of thing?
It didn't go into that in the article, so I do not know. Next news story. So Blackstone Publishing has launched Blackstone Unlimited. So this is a new platform that is dedicated to giving libraries access to more audiobooks. Currently, there are 6,500 titles in the platform. I thought this was interesting, and apparently Blackstone's been paying attention, probably to us, I mean, because we cover stuff, because I'm sure they heard us over the last few weeks talking about the success of libraries recently, and they were like, holy smokes, let's slap this new platform together and get it out there and record 6,500 audiobooks. I don't think that's true, but clearly they're following the trends and seeing that library usage is up year over year and that, you know, like the digital formats are up. And specifically, we talked about audiobooks last week. I don't remember what the percentage was. 13%, 19%, something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember.
More books is good news.
Yeah.
Love a good audiobook.
Heck yeah.
Can't read while you're driving any other way.
All right, JH, your turn.
All right. Oh, we're moving on to AI stuff.
Yeah, you have the voice. It's your turn.
Is it my turn? In our continued coverage of our robot overlords. So this first news story is there is a new nonprofit called Fairly Trained, and it sounds like they're focused completely on AI. So according to their website, they say, we certify fair training data use in generative AI. And then generative AI models are trained on the work of human creators. Our mission is to make sure those creators are being fairly treated. We certify AI companies to get a license for their training data. So sounds like it's a good thing, moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I'm imagining this is like sort of a certification process, like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe like ISO certification, though probably, I don't know if it's a stringent or more, or like a UL certification, but the way I understand it is basically if you're a company and you're training generative AI and you want to make sure that you're doing the right thing and getting licensing and doing everything appropriately, then they'll work with you and certify that yes, you are doing this fairly.
So important. There, yeah. I know a few different creators that have had their work basically stolen by these AI companies trying to use it for various forms of art, and it's not right.
Well, I hope they steal mine because it is sure to break whatever intelligence they think they have going on. I don't think that the AI can handle Axel Gunnar.
No. Probably not.
All right, our next one is interesting too. So tech company, I don't know how you say this, Verastage? Yeah, tech company Verastage has launched a platform called Insight, which is an AI-driven platform specifically for book publishers. So basically, like, you would go, a publisher would go work with them and say, hey, what tools do you have to help us? And this new tool is supposed to, I'll just read right from the article. It says, to analyze documents, generate metrics, editorial and marketing assets, sales materials, and other content. Insight also includes tools for extracting and describing images within a document, generating audiobooks, and downloading reports. So it's just basically like supposed to be kind of an all-around tool to help publishers do their job, which, all right, it makes sense to me. I mean, that's what every company is really going to be looking to do with AI at this point is, okay, where can we make our jobs easier? Where can we get efficiency? That sort of a thing.
Makes me wonder who it's replacing, though, on the publishing company side.
Yeah,
that's the part you don't know, right?
Right. So on a kind of lighter, funnier note, so the minute you said the name, so I'm a big fan of Jodi Taylor's Chronicles of St. Mary's series, and the most recent books in the series that I just finished like a couple months ago, the main kind of evil company in it is called Insight. So I'm just thinking of that the entire time.
That's funny. Could be. Who knows?
Yeah, we're in the beginnings.
I mean, the thing is there's no way like AI doesn't become super disruptive. There's no way it doesn't replace some jobs. But we also don't know what's going to come out of the backside either. So that part doesn't scare me too much, at least over the next several years. I think you will see companies that grab new tools, and as the tools get better, then the people get more efficient. And so then maybe you'll have ones decide they don't need as many people. But generally, historically, a lot of really smart companies and entrepreneurs and things, they won't just dump the people they have. They'll repurpose them to bigger, better, greater things, right? So
need help.
You know, I know that's maybe a very optimistic view of our world today. But I mean, really, what else is there to say? Like, if you're a person and you exist and you're trying to survive with worky job things, then just keep making yourself more valuable and grow your skill sets more, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. No, wait, I did that one. It's your turn again.
Yep. All right. So this next one is kind of interesting. So this came from Wired.com. So it looks like an AI researcher found that someone created an imitation of a book she wrote on AI and published it on Amazon with the same title. Amazon took the book down, but it was believed to be AI generated. So basically the scammer told their AI to write a summary is what it looks like.
Yeah, that was what I got out of it.
Yeah.
So it was shorter. It was only like 45 pages.
Right. And that's kind of standard with those.
And then it just like mimicked her stuff. Yeah, that's a creepy one, right?
Yeah.
Well, and I've seen like real people be affected by things like that where they're told that their book was written by an AI, but they were the ones that wrote it and they can't do anything about it. So it goes that opposite way as well, where accusations can be wrong and still, you know, land in a fun place.
It's a weird time to be alive.
Fun times.
All right. Well, that's the news.
Woo. All right. For our tools segment this time, we're going to talk about everyone's favorite, Scrivener, and then segue into something else.
Oh, yeah. We're talking bad about Scrivener this time. Get ready. Buckle in. We're doing the complaint department.
It wronged me, man. It did me dirty. That was not cool.
Let's hear it. Let's hear your story. Let's confront Scrivener.
So I went to so this is for the long project that I've been working on for, you know, the past 10-ish years. So it's been through a few versions of Scrivener since then, right? And I was sitting there going, okay, so I zip my files and I put them on a backup hard drive. And then I upload those onto my computer. And then I trust that they're going to work when I go and I click into them. It did not work when I clicked into them. Some of my documents had completely blank chapters where there should have been an awful lot of words. So I'm sitting there trying to check an old version to see like, hey, what did I do before? And, you know, double check that I'm not contradicting myself somewhere. And I've got nothing to look at whatsoever. It's just, that was horrible. So I have all of these different versions of backups that I had saved over the years. I rename the files and save again every time I made a big change. And about half of them were worthless. Mm-hmm. Worthless. So yeah, I had to change up how I'm doing all of my save drives and my backups. And
yeah.
I thought zipping the file was enough. Apparently not.
I was going to say that was my question as far as like where you're saving them. So I hear that happens sometimes with different like cloud services where just Scrivener and some of the cloud services just do not want to play nice together.
I can speak to this. That was actually when we first found Scrivener, it was like, oh, this is really cool. That was what kept me from using it. And that would have been circa 2015, somewhere in that neighborhood. 2016 maybe, because what I found was exactly what you described, Becca, is I bought and paid for Scrivener and I took my whole document and I put it in Scrivener and then I saved it into my OneDrive. And if I tried to reopen it from a different OneDrive, if I tried to download it, I would either it just would be like crash, nothing, or I'd open it and it would be blank. And so then I was like, well, I don't, this is no good to me right now because I really value the cloud storage. But the last couple of years, how long have I been using it now? 3 years, maybe? 2 years, 3 years?
Maybe something like that.
It doesn't do that anymore. And they've done something different with the file structure, because also used to be if you had the Mac version. And how did it work, JH? If you tried to open the Mac version on PC, you would have some drama, or vice versa, something like that?
No, you had to. Yeah, it used to be where if I wanted to save, so I use a Mac primarily, but if I wanted to save my files and reopen them on Windows, I would have to save it to a different file type. It wasn't just the standard Scrivener file type. It was like I remember there's like a V2 that got added on to the end of the file name or something like that. And that was so that I could open it on a Windows machine. And then, use that to reopen it on my Mac again. But I think that's not a thing anymore. Yeah, I think since they upgraded the Windows, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have that issue anymore. Yeah, because I use both, right?
I wasn't able to bounce back and forth.
You weren't able to?
When the versions were different from one another, it would not open the V2 version on a V1. Like, it would not allow me to bounce back and forth. Oof. I had to pick one machine and stick with it, and that was horrible. So that wasn't the best. It's a lot better now.
Yeah, it's not like that now for sure. Nope. Like, I can be writing like right now on my PC, and then I can just close Scrivener and get up, walk into the other room, and open my MacBook and just reopen it. It'll, you know, everything works pretty good. Every once in a while, I might have a little jankiness with OneDrive where they didn't automatically sync as quickly as they should have or whatever. But I have no problem swapping between the two now, and it all works in OneDrive great. And I've got no complaints in that arena.
Well, see, I was even saving onto an external hard drive and taking that and plugging it into the other computer, and it still was failing me. Ugh. Just, it did not work very well at all. It was not great. But now I find that I just save in multiple places, and I save multiple versions of the file. So I'll create myself an ebook, and I will also create like a just basic document file. Mm-hmm. So if I need to go back, I at least have those, because those were the things that ended up saving me when I needed to go and check those old versions of the document. Those old basic copies were the ones that I was able to fall back on.
Yeah.
Which I shouldn't have to use, but it was nice to have.
Right. I was going to say, I've actually been doing this for years where I'm kind of OCD with my stuff, just because I've had that before where, you know, some software program has, you know, burned me for whatever reason. So like I have save it on the computer itself, different cloud storages. I have my USB. I also will sometimes like go ahead and export it to like a Word file and have that saved. I mean, when I'm at the point where I'm submitting, I have that saved anyway, just because you need that as a submission document. But so now I have multiple versions of all of those. But yeah. It might be a little OCD, but at least if one thing's not working, I have plenty of others to try.
Well, and that's why I do multiples as well, because if one of them fails me, I need a backup. And the ebook is great for popping the document onto my phone to edit while I'm on the go. That's usually what I use those for, is just to edit myself when I'm not at home.
Yeah.
But no, I don't see it as OCD at all. I see it as saving yourself a headache in the future.
Yes.
I actually ran into a problem where my writing folder has gotten really big. So it's like 200 gigs or something, because I write so much. Or I got a bunch of stupid pictures in there. It's probably kitten videos or something. But I used to always back up my why are you laughing at me? I like kitten videos. Everyone likes kitten videos, James.
I know, but I just heard Charlie Kelly in my head going, "Your cat making too much noise all the time?
You'll be smitten."
Kitten mittens.
No, but I used to back them up to external hard drives, and all my external hard drives have just died. And then I was backing it up to USB sticks, but it's like now that it's 200 gig, it got a little ridiculous, and I wasn't doing as much as I should have, and I was thinking about it, and it was actually – I'm just going to say this live on the air because we're totally live and not recording. but we have a super secret writer's cabal that's hidden from the world called the best smelling authors. And
never heard of such a thing.
Becca's never heard of it. Becca's on there with us. But we had a whole conversation, like, I don't know, it was like a month ago or something about backing stuff up. And I was like, I really need to take this seriously again. So I went and I'm paying for a yearly subscription of Google now on top of OneDrive. And then I also did the Apple one, which I'm not super in love with at the moment. But I'll talk about the Google one first. So it actually, you can get an application where it sort of works just like OneDrive. So like once a month, I'll just go make a new copy of my writing folder and I'll dump it in there. And I think I'm paying for 2 terabytes. So I can, you know, keep older versions in there for a while before I run out of space. The Apple one, it's weird. Like, it doesn't seem to have a way for me to, or I'm just stupid. Like, let me just be fair to Apple. This could be that I'm an idiot, but I haven't. So when I tried to access it through my Windows machine and it's like, yeah, you can upload pictures and stuff. I'm like, that's cool. Where do I dump a whole folder? And it was like, no, people don't do that. That's not Apple. That's not an Apple thing. You don't dump folders. So far, even on the MacBook, all I've figured out how to do is just save stuff directly to it. So I'm not sure I'm in love with that one.
Wait, so are you opening the iCloud storage through like a browser or through the Finder window?
Through the Finder window.
Okay, you should be able to just drag and drop.
Well, I got a problem though, right? So I was being slightly more cost effective and I got the MacBook that didn't have a huge hard drive because I was like, well, I'll just keep it in the cloud and download things as I need it. And because it's all in the cloud, I can't copy it to that stupid folder. If I'd have got a MacBook with a bigger hard drive, I could have just downloaded the whole folder, copied it over, and then just save files there, and it would have never been an issue. But because there's not enough space on this hard drive for me to download my whole writing folder, I'm a little stuck, I think.
Yeah. Wait, so where are you downloading from?
The internet.
Well, I mean, is it in a different cloud storage?
Yes, it's in OneDrive. It's in OneDrive. Okay. But
I may have to come mess with it with you here when we're done.
Yeah, don't.
I drag and – so I'll have like 2 Finder windows open and I drag and drop stuff all the time between mine. So I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'll show you what
you're doing
mean.
Different.
So OneDrive, when you have it installed, you have an option. You can go into the settings and you can tell it to download everything to this device and keep this device always up to date. Mm-hmm. Or you can have it on a setting where it will only download something if you try to open it. And that saves you hard drive space, right? So on my, my stupid PC, I've got like a 2 terabyte hard drive. So I'm like, yeah, keep an actual copy on this device. Whereas the MacBook doesn't have enough room for the whole writing folder. So I have to leave it in the cloud and then just pull things down as I need them.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I thought we were going to gripe about Scrivener and talk about how I'm done with my tech.
We were grabbing about Scrivener. That led to the whole conversation on the group about the
true.
Saving. That is what started this conversation backups. Was yep. I got wronged. I was mad about it.
I do have one other complaint about Scrivener that I think is just an annoying thing to me. So if you were to like, I don't know how to describe this. If you were to pull up like an older version of Microsoft of like Word, right? Like a Word 97, something like that. The spell checker isn't modernized. Whereas if you open up Word today, it's more modernized. So words that are kind of accepted, it'll not bug you with, and it'll be like, those are correct. But Scrivener, it seems, is still like on that older like spell checker framework. So I'll use words that I know that are right, but it will flag them as misspellings, and it just annoys the tears out of me.
I just teach mine a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, no, this is right. Learn it.
Is that a thing?
Bugging me about it. Yeah. You can 100%. I use it all the time, especially if I'm doing something like a fantasy work where you're making up a name or it's an unusual name. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It'll constantly like redline it, like stop that. Just click on it. It's a right click.
Didn't even know that was a thing.
Teach it. Help it learn.
I have seen where, like, sometimes it'll flag just kind of basic words for whatever reason, just random. So instead of, you know, teaching it to learn those words, sometimes just like deleting and retyping the word will fix it. I don't know why. I don't know why it was flagged in the first place, and I don't know why retyping it fixes it. But yeah, I do run into that sometimes.
I'll have it sometimes highlight half of the word, but not the whole word. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a legitimate word. What are you doing?
Right.
This actually reminds me, I had a question I was going to ask you, JH.
Okay.
Has the transformation from smart to curly and curly to smart, has that always been there? Because I didn't think it used to be that easy.
Yes, at least that I've seen,
my God. Listen, people, I think you hear a lot of good things about Scrivener. In fact, we try not to talk about it on the show because that's what every guest wants to choose for tools. And Becca just wins the prize for 2024 that she gets to talk about Scrivener. But what I'm going to tell you is the price of Scrivener is worth it alone for the super simple changing your smart quotes to curly quotes. And if you don't know the difference, well, figure it out before you start submitting places, because mm-hmm. most places expect you to submit with smart quotes, whereas mm-hmm. the default is going to be, they say smart, straight quotes. Most places yes. are going to expect you to submit with straight quotes rather than smart quotes or slash curly quotes, I guess is the other way they're said. And what will have happened, so what I'm dealing with right now is I have a book I wrote with all straight quotes. And then I was editing, and I didn't realize till I was many chapters in that the smart quotes was the default. So I was literally doing both. But Scrivener has a really cool thing under under the edit. It's edit transformations, and then it's change everything to straight quotes, change everything to smart quotes.
Yep.
And that makes life so easy.
Yes. It's very good.
It's handy for a lot of stuff, but yeah, when it fails hard.
It really is the most popular software. Like literally every guest, I'm like, you have anything tools wise you want to talk about? Well, I love Scrivener. Like, no, you don't get to talk about Scrivener. We're not doing it. This is not a weekly Scrivener podcast. Unless Literature and Latte wants to pay us. If you guys ever listen and you want to pay us, or if you just want to make sure that JH and I always have the newest version free of charge, we'll let every guest talk about Scrivener.
Right.
And also, we sold 2 copies of Scrivener, didn't we, for them? To best-selling authors.
Yes, we did. Mm. We did. Yeah.
Conned them right into it. All right.
One of them needed to be convinced more than the other one, though.
I don't remember which one was being difficult about it.
Yeah.
No, not difficult. Had like a bunch of questions wanting to make sure it was going to work for his needs.
And then we threatened him, right? So you're not a writer unless you use Scrivener. You fraud. JH, why are you were chortling and you're giving me an evil look. So I must have said something stupid.
I'm just going to say enunciate.
What I did.
I'm not telling you.
What I did. I'll just rip it out when I'm editing. Everyone's going to hear this part and they're going to be like, I never heard him say anything weird or because it'll be gone. All right. That was tools. So for Creatives on Fire this week, first thing I want to talk about is one time Becca asked JH to see a picture of her deck. She asked her for a deck pic.
With an E.
And also, apparently, what I said on the last thing that got JH so riled up was I did not enunciate properly, and it sounded like I said condom instead of conned them. But I'm a hillbilly. What do you guys expect? It's fine.
Terrible.
It's fine. Right. Creatives on Fire. So what we talked about last week was we were going to kind of put some structure around this and kind of go over things and highlight maybe some things we talked about before and just sort of have a plan. So with that in mind, last week we sort of talked about why finding the financial independence thing was such a big deal for us. And so the next obvious thing to talk about would be the Trinity study again. And so what this is Trinity College in Texas did this study to determine how could a person figure out how much money they would need to retire at any age and never run out of money, right? And so their best math came up with, their best result basically was that if a person were invested in like broad-based index funds, and whatever that total amount was, a person could live on 4% or less of it every year, that it would grow faster than they were spending it, and that they would never run out of money. So this is, again, it's the Trinity study. You can Google it. You can look it up. There's all kinds of interesting things about it. There's, you know, people who argue against it. There's people who argue for it. What I say is it's a good framework, right? When you're starting to save and you're starting to invest, it's a great framework to go, okay, well, if I sort of set a goal at this, it gives me at least an idea or a picture of what I need, right? And you can kind of go, well, if I need to live on $40,000 a year, then I need $1 million. If I have to live on $120,000 a year, then I need $3 million, right? And it just kind of gives you a way, but, you know, obviously it can go other directions too, right? So if you spend, I don't know, $150,000 a year, then you need $4 million to be able to retire at any point. If you spend $20,000 a year, then basically you'd need $500,000, right? Which the problem is that those become very big numbers, especially when you're just kind of starting out and starting to save. And it's like, well, that's not obtainable. But it can be, right? It can be if you start making different decisions and follow some of the other things that we talk about, and you start investing and you start saving and you start cutting back on expenses and things, then those numbers you get to a little bit quicker. And that's basically the rub there. It's worth understanding. It's worth looking at. It's not a like, oh, I'm going to figure this out tomorrow and that's it. But it definitely gives you a light at the end of the tunnel, if you will. Anything to add?
I think you covered it well.
All right, great. They all came to listen to me talk anyways. All right, then on the writing business side, we thought we'd start with the least you need to know about the indie path. So last week we talked about there's really sort of two main paths you can pursue as a author from a business standpoint and how you could be successful. So this week we'll hone in a little bit on the indie path. So a lot of people, and I think the last time we talked about this, I went on about it a little bit. I get sort of frustrated sometimes because one of my fellow authors will just be like, well, I'm kind of tired of submitting and whatever, so this book, I'm just going to self-publish it and see what happens. I was like, well, that's not really necessarily a great idea. You kind of need to know how the space works, right? If you hope to be successful. And what you'll find is if you start researching that most of the successful self-published authors, very few of them are putting out like one book. Most of them are honing in on the way Amazon works and using its algorithms in their favor, right? And the way they do that is they get a whole lot of books together in one series. And then they make sure that they all have very professional covers. They make sure that they learn the right keywords and categories. They learn how to do the ads. They learn how to do really good back cover copy, all of that. And then what happens is they release them. Usually you'll hear the term rapid release, which means anywhere from I release the first one and up to 90 days, I release the next one. And that's really, and then the next one, and then the next one, and the next one. And that's really about playing into how Amazon sells products, because the way Amazon sells products is whenever a new product comes out for the first 30 days, they will help try to sell it really, really hard. The next 30 to 60 days, they will continue to try to sell it pretty hard. And then the 60 to 90 days, they will still try a little bit. But at some point, you know, when it gets to 90 days, they're basically expecting the product to stand on its own. So the idea would be you put out one book, and then within that 90 days before you fall off that cliff of despair, you get the next one out and it drives people back to the first one. And then you get the next one out and it drives people back to the first one. Then you get the next one out and it drives people back to the first one. And then on top of that, you learn how to use the ad platforms, the Amazon AMS and Facebook and whatever else is out there. I'm just learning some of that myself. And then if you have enough books in the series, then you'll be driving people back to the first book, and hopefully more of them will be buying the rest of the books in the series, and then you can make some money. I think that's generally most of it, right?
Yes.
And that, I think, really gives you the framework. So if you're thinking about going down the indie path, that's really what you're looking at, right? And if you're like, well, I don't want to write 10 books in this series, I wanted to write one. Well, then keep submitting it. That's probably the better business decision for you, right? If you go, I really wrote this one big novel, it's a standalone, I might could do a sequel, but I'm not really interested in writing a whole bunch of them, then self-publishing route may not be the right route to go. You might want to submit it through all of the agents and all of the big editors and publishers. And then when that doesn't work, then you might want to try some of the smaller presses and see what you can do there. Mm-hmm. Because I wouldn't really approach the indie route unless I plan to do a series with a lot of books.
I was going to say, if you looked at the serialized things that Amazon's trying to do right now, or you do like little versions of things, and it's more like the old school where you would put something out in like a magazine.
Yeah.
Just like one chapter at a time.
Yeah, you could try that. And I think there have been people who've been successful at it. I don't really know a lot about it, so I couldn't advise anyone on how it works and how to make that work, but it is a good point. There, that is a thing. It was called Vella, but I think they've rebranded it now, didn't they?
I'm not sure. It was Vella last time I looked at it.
Maybe it's still Kindle Vella. I think that's what they call it. But that is something else a person could look at. It'd be worth doing some research and seeing if you could find out what people are doing in that space to be successful, right? And I think that's important regardless of which path you're going down, is you have to learn, like, what are people doing that's successful, right? And then there's a lot more of a dice roll with the traditional path, of course, but you can go to conventions, you can talk to people, you can find out how they met their agents, how they met their editors, blah, 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 right? Jage, were you going to say something on the...
Yeah, I was curious if you did have a book that is just a standalone and you wrote it that way, you want to keep it that way. I don't know if anyone has done this or tried this, if we already know like what will happen if you do it or if we don't. So say you have a series that you can do the rapid release with. If you just plopped that standalone book down like in the middle of your rapid release, like would it gain some traction that way? Would they feed each other, or would it just get overlooked?
That's a really good question. I think I can answer it. And actually, I need to kind of backstep on what I said just a little bit, because there is, I wouldn't say there's no value in self-publishing a single title. That's particularly true if you already have a series you're doing. For example, I have the one book in the Moonshine Wizard series. And so I have seen that whenever Blade Mage sales are up, I will see a little bit of traction around the Moonshine Wizard, and that book's, you know, very old. It's been around for a long time. But, you know, if I sell, I don't know, if like 100 people read The Blade Mage, then one or two of them will probably go read The Moonshine Wizard, right? So I think the same could be true. I mean, that's part of building up your backlog. That's what you want to have happen, right? So, and I think that you probably would see more of that during the rapid release if the series you're doing is performing and you're getting sales and you're getting page reads and things, and you drop that down in there. Well, you got to figure anybody who's gone on from book one to book two to book three in the other series, they like your writing. They like what you're doing. So there's a pretty good chance that some amount of them would then go grab a copy of the other thing, even though it's not the same series and it's different. I wouldn't expect huge returns, though.
Right.
I would go into that expecting a very small amount of trickle effect and be very happy with whatever I got, you know? Is there anything else we should talk about on that front? Yes. Just keep in mind, if you go the indie route, then it's all on you, right? And even though it's all on you, you cannot fall into the trap of taking a bad cover because it cost you less, because it's cheaper. You know, you have to be as professional as the big guys, because that's what people are looking for, right? The first thing that gets somebody's attention is the cover. So you have to have a very professional cover done that speaks to the genre and appeals to people. and you have to be able to write back cover matter that appeals to people. And if you can't, then you better hire somebody who can, right? If you can't edit it on your own, which most of us cannot edit good enough on our own. Everybody who's not a writer thinks that they're a great editor. That's been my experience. But what you find out is when it comes to editing a whole novel, that is not the same as, you know, writing, editing the 3-page essay you wrote in college, right? Mm-hmm. So you probably need somebody other than yourself. So you might have to pay for an editor. And the self-publishing route can get very expensive very quickly that way, right? It's pretty easy to spend $300 or $400 or $500 on each cover you need. You know, if you're talking decent sized books, you're probably going to spend $4,000 per book to get somebody to edit it. If you're paying somebody for back cover matter, I have no idea what that cost. I just force myself to get reasonably okay at that skill. And fortunately I have JH to edit for me, so that helps as well, but it can get very expensive very quickly. The ads as well. And I alluded to that last week, why I didn't want to go into too much detail just yet, at least until I learn a little bit more about ads. I don't want to pretend like I'm an expert because I've had a little bit of success with them. That can get very, very expensive, very, very quickly, you know, especially like if you're looking at like Facebook. Facebook is like, it's like that scene from South Park where Randy Marsh takes Stan into the bank because Stan's grandma gave him a check for $100. And he's like, I want to teach my son about savings. And the guy at the bank's like, okay, great. We're just going to put it into this account for you so we can draw some interest. And it's gone. That's Facebook ads. You turn that on and it's like, you're like, I'll set a nice little $10 budget. And you hit go. And 5 minutes later, you're like, you're out of money. And you got no clicks. Sorry. You want to give us another $10? You know? So there's definitely a lot of work that goes into it. I think that's really important to understand on the front side. If you're disenfranchised, if you're disenchanted, that's the word I'm looking for. If you're disenchanted because you've been why are you laughing at me? Just because I don't know words?
I knew what you were about to say, and it amused me.
This is my life. If you are disenchanted with the submission process and you're wanting to go the indie route, the most important thing is that you understand what goes into that and what it will take, and that it is also a lot of work and it still requires a little bit of luck and you have to do everything right. Anything else?
Yeah, it's not simple.
All good? Are we done? Did we do a whole podcast? We get like right at an hour or two right now, I think. Yeah. Look at us. Woo-hoo. Like professionals. And there was no train. All right, Becca, no, tell
except right at the beginning.
Except right at the beginning before we started.
Yep. Right.
Becca, tell the people where to find
you. No train ad for you.
And then tell them where to find Rebecca. So. And then tell them where to find RJ. And then
well, everything kind of goes through. If you go to RebeccaJHarris.net, it'll link you to everything. So I've got like the front page. We'll have all of the links on there. The podcast, if you're interested, is available pretty much anywhere podcasts are. Also, Beyond the Veil, ParanormalTales.com. It is also listed as a blog. So if you want to read instead of listen, you can. If you want to listen on the website, you can. I've got it set up in kind of a multiple process thing.
Very nice.
On Facebook, I'll be at Superstars this year in Colorado Springs, and in just a couple of weeks here. It's just around the corner.
Yeah, you'll have to see our faces.
I plan to be in Niagara Falls for World Fantasy this year as well, as long as all goes well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you know who? You know how Facebook does the recommended friends thing?
Yes.
It's like you probably know this person. So I've gotten some really good, like I get excited whenever it's like an author I've been reading for years and years, you know, and that always makes me really happy. Today, I got Brie Larson, like a Captain Marvel. Facebook thinks I may know Captain Marvel.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah. We have a mutual friend, apparently.
Yeah. Well, aren't you fancy?
I'm super fancy. JH, tell the people's. Where to not go find you because you squirted taco sauce on me.
I did not. Liar.
All over my pretty shirt.
No. I'm at jhfleming.net. I'm also on all the social medias as JH Fleming. You can find me on Fiverr for hire as an editor. My band, Wildwood Minstrels, is also on all the music platforms, so you can find us there if you like folk music. I think that's it, right?
And I'm Philip Dreher Duncan, and this is an important public service announcement by me. Do not go find JH on Fiverr, because she has 3 novels of mine she's got to edit, so you guys have to wait. I mean, you can go find her and try to hire her, but she's going to be like, I got to hold off because my stupid boyfriend has writes too many books and I got to do those and then squirt more taco sauce on him. Anyway.
So you say that, but you totally took an entire year to edit one of my novels. So I don't think I'm in any rush.
Don't call me out like that on the pod. Why would you do that?
Well, don't be slow.
I'm feeling very ganged up on right now. I don't appreciate this.
Well, you're being mean.
I wasn't being mean. I was just giving good public service announcements.
Uh-huh.
I don't know who I am. Philip Dreher Duncan. PhilipDreherDuncan.com. Go buy my books. That's all. This has been an episode. Thank you, Becca.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, that was what I was trying to do. Oops. Accidental extra recording. I mean, DLC content. Bonus content.